Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. And I mean throughout Florida. We have seminars all over the place. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from 1 minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in the studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the email the show tab.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. And even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows. You can sign up for our free seminars. We'll certainly talk about that in a moment. You can see who the show's sponsors are and hyperlink to all of their websites. You can link to our Facebook page, and remember to click like. Our Facebook fan page keeps growing and growing, and you can link to our brand new HOA and condo blog at hoa-condoblog.com. Tomorrow's topic, real interesting. Those of you who live in an HOA, I can tell you, with the help of Jan Bergman, I drafted a whole bunch of condo legislation that we now have a sponsor for in both the House and the Senate, and we're looking to make some new law this upcoming legislative session. Please read tomorrow's blog if you live in an HOA. Real important. And, of course, by visiting our website, you can join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements about the show. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly, Glazer & Associates, and pick our brains off the air, you can call us at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. Again, 855-4 Condo Craze, and the law firm's website, condo-laws.com. Again, condo-laws.com. And great, really great teaching the Condo Craze Board Member Certification course at the Broward Convention Center this past Thursday. It really, I got to tell you, was an amazing turnout we had, and it was standing room only at the seminar. Great job by Henry Robbins, who was our guest last week from the South Florida Cooperator, in putting this event together. And really, thanks to everybody who attended the course. Instead of certifying yourself by signing that silly affidavit that doesn't even require you to acknowledge that Florida Statute 718 exists.
So silly.
So silly. And again, hopefully all of you would agree that you're now a little wiser. And I tell you, it was also great and pretty flattering that so many of our listeners to the show stopped by our booth and said hello. Really much, much appreciated. And, you know, Scott, as you know, it's amazing. You know, we ask people at the end of the seminar to fill out the evaluation form stating what they like and didn't like about the seminar.
Yeah.
And person after person had the same complaint about the seminar this time. What was it? It was too short.
Oh, my goodness.
We taught the course for 2 hours, and at the end, everybody was saying we would have liked more. We wanted more. 2 hours wasn't enough.
Can't get enough of that condo law.
There you go. And that was definitely flattering. Again, to remind our listeners, election season is in full bloom here for condos and HOAs. And remember, Florida law provides members of a condo board, you have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board. And one way to get certified is by taking the Condo Craze Board Member Certification course. It's the first course that was written by an attorney and was approved by the Florida DBPR.
And, of course, that attorney was Eric, and he has now certified 3,200 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida Condominium Board of Directors. The course is fun. The course is free. There's food served. You get to ask questions, and you leave with a summary of everything you learned and a really nice frameable certificate.
Yeah, and this is really the perfect time to come and learn about your duties as board members, people. You can learn about budgets, reserves, financial reporting, board meeting procedures, and a whole lot more. As we said last time, we even added some information this year about making material alterations to your condo, competitive building, and even a little portion about emotional support animals. So don't miss this really great opportunity. And if you want to see some pictures of the past seminars, just visit the show's Facebook page.
Yeah, so where we're going to be next is the question. This coming Saturday, December 15th at 10 a.m., we're going to be in Orlando at the Holiday Inn at Universal Studios. And after that seminar is over, Jan Bergman and I are also going to be discussing the two bills that we just filed in Tallahassee this week that seeks to bring lots of changes to homeowner association law. And then we'll be back at the Hard Rock in Hollywood January 24th at 7 p.m. After that, we'll be in West Palm Beach on February 27th at 8 o'clock in the morning at the PM Expo, again, West Palm Beach Fairgrounds. So if you want to register for either the Orlando, the Hollywood, or the West Palm Beach seminar, just go to the show's website, www.condocrazeandhoas, and fill out the form. Brian, our office manager, will let you know that you are registered. Karen, on that note, how about we take Patrick from Boca, who's been holding a long time? How are you, Patrick?
I live in Boca Raton, and the development is called Corinthian Gardens.
Yes.
In 2005, we received $752,000 from our insurance company for the Wilma hurricane damage.
Yes.
But this only covered our roof, nothing for the clubhouse, glass sliding doors, or entry doors. Our condo association reopened the claim in 2010, and we received another $600,000. We didn't have enough money for new glass sliding doors for everyone, so the association gave everyone new rollers for the existing glass sliding doors, but nothing for sliding screen doors. My question is, if the Florida statute calls for the association to maintain, repair, and or replace glass sliding doors, doesn't that include sliding screen doors?
I don't know. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know the answer to that. Number one, I'd want to see what your condo docs call for, but I don't know if the statute actually requires the sliding glass doors. They came with the unit originally, though, right?
I'm sorry, say that again.
They came with the unit originally when bought from the developer, though, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, so, every time I've gotten prices on the glass sliding doors, it always includes sliding screen doors.
So my hunch is yes, you're probably correct. And the insurance coverage that was that actually paid for the claim did wind up paying for those sliding glass doors. But why can't you do this? Obviously, that payment, that $600,000 supplemental payment made by the insurance company, was paid for a reason. In other words, a report came with that check that was prepared by the investigator for the claim. If the association has those documents in its possession, you can ask for it. Ask for a breakdown of exactly what the insurance company paid for. Find out if those sliding glass doors were paid for.
He wants to know if the screen doors.
Yeah, the screen doors were paid for. That's what I meant. And if, in fact, it was covered by the insurance company, and that $600,000 portion of it may, in fact, have to go back to you. I guess that's where you're heading.
Well, we received the $600,000, and I did endorse that check. But that we had to pay $378,000 to the lawyers. That only left us $222,000. That's why they couldn't give us new sliding glass doors.
Only $378,000 for the lawyers, huh? They gave you a break,
yeah,
I guess. Yeah. Never mind. Go ahead.
Plus expenses.
Right.
But I have attended the a seminar for Eric down at the Hard Rock Casino, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought I'd give you a call today and see if you could help me out with these sliding screen doors.
Patrick, let's do this. Number one, thank you for attending the course, and I'm really glad to hear that you enjoyed it. Call us tomorrow in the office, 855-4-CONDOCRAZE, and I'd be glad to talk to you about your very specific problem off the air. How about that? Okay?
Thank you so much. What's that phone number again?
855-4-CONDOCRAZE. Okay?
CONDOCRAZE, And can I get a copy of this conversation that we just had today?
We put up, and again, that's a good question for all our listeners to know. This show gets broadcast Sunday morning, and probably by Sunday night or Monday night, the latest, it is on the internet for all to hear. Lots of people who can't listen to the show on Sunday mornings get to listen to it on any time after the show. It could be up as early as the same day, okay?
You just click on it.
Just click
so
on
much,
it. Go
Eric.
To our website.
Appreciate
Thank you,
it.
Patrick. Thank you. How about we go to Julie? And Julie, according to what's before us, is from Columbus, Missouri. How are you, Julie?
Hey, actually, it's Columbus, Mississippi.
Oh, Mississippi. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you're close.
Are you?
Hey, I have a question that I read all the blogs, all the Ask the Lawyers and everything in the state of Florida. I've taken the board certification class, not with you guys because I'm up in Fort Walton, but I've taken it several times.
Right.
Something that is a problem to me and I've never seen it addressed is I am a board member at a condominium where we have a master association.
Right.
So there's five associations with a master association over them, and that board for the master is each president from the underlying associations.
Right.
Well, one of our associations, we're 191 units. One of our associations is four units, and they're all commercial. It's a commercial building. Because of that, we don't fall under the jurisdiction of the DBPR.
That is exactly correct. That's right.
187 unit owners, homeowners, don't have the ability to have the DBPR help us with any of our issues.
Julie, this is a great phone call because I've argued your position many, many times in the past. As a matter of fact, I even had a case that I worked on that went up to the Third District Court of Appeal where I argued that the division doesn't have the authority to create its own jurisdiction and say, hey, we're not going to hear cases where there's a commercial condominium unit involved. And believe it or not, the Third District Court said, no, they can. They can make their own rules and regulations as to what they can hear and what they won't hear. But I'm in agreement with you. As a matter of fact, you take all the condominiums that get built, let's say, for example, in Miami. All of them get built today with some commercial unit, whether it be a convenience store on
like
the first
the
floor, let's say, like the Grand. You know, all kinds. Even if there's one commercial unit now in the building, guess what? The arbitration division will refuse to hear any arbitration dispute involving that building. And to me, that makes no sense whatsoever. Obviously, the intent of that statute was to save condos money so they wouldn't have to litigate. Well, guess what? Now, if you put a grocery store in that building, something, a convenience store for the owners, they lose the advantage of going to arbitration, and they're forced to go to a courtroom. It is ridiculous. It is silly. And I got to tell you, Julie, you should rally the troops, as many people as you can, and complain. Absolutely, complaints should be made to the DBPR, telling them to start hearing cases involving condominiums where there's a couple of commercial units. It's no big deal. And there's no distinction in the statute. The statute, in my opinion, does not give them the authority to do that. And despite the fact that I argued that at the appellate court said, well, they get to make their own jurisdiction rules. But great phone call, Julie. We appreciate it. On that note, it is time to go to our first break. Lots and lots to talk about when we get back. We're going to turn our listeners' attention to the do's and don'ts in hanging up your Christmas and Hanukkah decorations. We'll talk about our state's judiciary, and we're going to raise some interesting questions about whether or not judges should be friends with lawyers on Facebook, believe it or not. Roz from Delray Beach, we also see you holding. Hang in there. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Taking your phone calls today, and the phone lines have been busy, 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you meet hundreds of different associations and be listed on the show's website, have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. On that note, how about we go to Roz from Delray Beach. Roz, thanks for holding.
Hi, this is Roz Hopin. I live in a condo in Delray Beach, and I know it's mandatory to have the paving, the painting, and the roofing reserves. Can a board vote in new reserves, like restoration and recreation, without throwing it open to the association to vote on it?
Okay, here's the bottom line on reserves. You had it right. You got the roof, pavement, and painting, but you left out one other thing that the board is required to reserve for, and that is any item that's going to cost $10,000 or more eventually to repair or replace. Okay.
So that should that be by name or just an a reserve that's called restoration or recreation that, with no,
no that's,
absolute...
No, that specific item, for example, let's say you're reserving for electrical. You know there's eventually going to be an electrical upgrade that's required. So, and that's going to cost, you know, in excess of $10,000. That should be a very specific line item in your reserve budget that should be reserved for. Okay, it should be
So it should be done by line item.
Yes,
not
by
just
category.
A broad
that's correct. By category
and recreation.
That's correct. It should be by item. In other words, one for electrical, another one for roof, one for pavement, one for painting, one for perhaps structure again, and maybe one for the pool. Whatever's going to cost $10,000 or more, You need a very specific.
$10,000 or more in what period of time?
Ultimately, if it's going to cost $10,000 or more to repair or replace, it needs its own separate line item. Okay?
Okay, thank you so very much.
All right, thank you, Roz. All right, on that note, how about we go back to Julie, who called us from Mississippi. I apologize, we cut her off, and she had one last question. How are you, Julie?
Okay, as I told you, I am a board member, and by the way, I also won a appellate court decision this year where I had been sued as a board member.
Really?
By another board member in another association. My question is, I own in that association also. My board president filed a lawsuit, he and another board president on another association, suing two of the other association's presidents without a board meeting, without approval, in his own name using association funds, his name as a director on another board.
Oh, that is
so
absolutely
using that association's funds.
That is absolutely a no-no. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you where that comes up even more often. Sometimes board members wind up getting defamed by other people who live in the community. You know, they'll be accused of stealing money or things of that nature by people who live in the community. And they wind up filing suit against the person who made the defamatory comment using association funds. You'll hear that once in a while, even though that they themselves are specifically the named plaintiff and not the association. So, again, we've found that over the years. And I can tell you that is absolutely a no-no. If they have a personal case going on, that personal case does not get funded by the condominium association. It's different. It's totally different if they were to get sued as a result of something that they did while acting in their capacity as an officer and director. Then they can use association funds because you can bet that the bylaws of that association have an indemnity provision. But that's to indemnify them when they get sued, not to pay their plaintiff's attorney's fees when they're the ones doing the suing. And I hope that answers your question, Julie.
Well, kind of. I mean, I don't know what steps to take.
Give us a call. Give us a call tomorrow at the office, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. And on that note, let's take Bruce from Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, huh?
How are you, Bruce?
I'm doing really well, thanks. I'm just curious about a new board member just joined the board, and she has a real estate license. Will that substitute for the requirement?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, even if Barack Obama himself wanted to get on your board of directors, he'd have to become certified. But he would probably sign the affidavit. That's what I'm guessing. He wouldn't take the course. Right. But, yeah, absolutely. Your real estate license absolutely does not matter. Even if there's an attorney, all kidding aside, even if there's an attorney on your board of directors, that attorney would still have to get certified either by signing that affidavit or by taking an educational course. Okay?
Thank you very much.
You got it. It's funny. The topic of brokers on a board always is a hot topic over the years because people complain that the broker has some sort of advanced knowledge and they wind up getting the listing. And is there anything illegal about a broker being on the board? And the answer to that question is no, nothing illegal about a broker being on the board. Happens all the time. As a matter of fact, some of them make some great contributions to their board because of the result of all the knowledge they have on real estate law. So brokers, there's one for you.
All right. Well, the last show we spoke about your sister having her Weight Watchers meals taken right out from her freezer after she left a key to her condo unit with the board.
She thought that was real funny.
Seen it happen a million times.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's kind of weird. We spoke about the fact that refusal to give a key to the board can result in getting sued and having to pay big fees and costs. And we spoke about the screening, approval, rejection, and right of first refusal process in our Florida condominiums and HOAs.
Yeah, and just to recap, Karen and everybody else, there really is no statutory guidance out there as to what criteria can be used to screen and reject applicants, but I would tell you most association attorneys would agree that assuming your board has the authority to screen and approve and reject applicants, boards can use credit scores, criminal records, a prior history of evictions, of foreclosures, and the immediate inability to comply with the association's governing documents as the appropriate criteria. And, of course, boards are wise, of course, to properly adopt this criteria and apply it even-handedly or face the potential for discrimination type of lawsuits.
Let's see what our blog readers thought about the board's right to decide who gets to live in a community and who doesn't.
All right, start us off, Karen.
All right, Judy writes in and says, I plan to sell my house in the near future. Our board wants to meet the prospective owners before moving in. They charge $100 to interview the buyers, and they give them a rule book which states the phone numbers and rules of our HOA. Is this legal? I don't want them for any reason ruling out my buyer.
And that is a great question by Judy, because, you know, as you can see, not everybody is happy with the fact that their board has this power to kind of screen and reject their renters or buyers, because the board has the power to kill the sale or kill the lease in a tough market. But Judy's question asks also whether the HOA can charge a $100 fee to interview the buyers. And again, here's yet another example of where the condo statute provides very specific guidance and caps the amount at $100. And the HOA statute doesn't say a word.
Yeah. Well, we got another one here, Erica. This is from Maria, and she writes in and says, I believe the association/board must have some control over who lives within the specific community. Hence, it is in the best interest of the associations to A, ensure their documents reflect this in accordance with the law, B, same is published and acknowledged by all association members, and C, the board administers it in a consistent and non-discriminatory basis. Thanks for the criteria you offered. It's been very helpful.
All right. Ed writes in, as you've stated, here are the four basic criteria the board should use when determining whether or not to approve an applicant, but you forgot the most important, the responsibility of the board of directors, that the incoming new board has the financial capacity to pay the incoming new owner has the financial capacity to pay their financial commitments to the association. And I got to tell you, I love this comment by Ed, because here's the bottom line. If someone is approved by a bank for a mortgage, it's kind of difficult for that association to say that the association isn't going to approve you because they think you're not financially eligible. And after all, the bank is loaning this person all the money to buy this place. But it turns out that Ed was certainly correct looking back. If the association wound up disapproving buyers that qualified for a mortgage but obviously shouldn't have qualified, would have been a lot less damage done to condominium associations throughout the state. But again, looks like it's time for our bottom of the hour break. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. Kevin from Fort Lauderdale, we see you on hold. We'll be back right after this.
Second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Again, I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right. Before we just went to the break, we were talking a lot about approving, screening, and rejecting. And I got to tell you, bottom line, there's certainly a lot to know about all of that. And we wouldn't be a real show if we didn't also acknowledge that the screening process has been used by certain boards over the years to exclude certain people from moving into their community. No two ways about it. And I can also tell you that when an association gets accused of using their ability to screen and reject in a manner that's discriminatory, it can and will result in a visit and investigation by the Housing Authority, HUD, and ultimately, I can tell you, a lawsuit will be filed in either state or federal court, and it can get ugly. Enough said, apply your criteria very even-handedly. All right, on that note, how about we go to Kevin in Fort Lauderdale. How are you, Kevin?
Hi, good afternoon to you guys.
Good afternoon.
Let me ask you a question. In reference to a homeowner that I live in, and if you own more than one property in that association, does that give you any form of authority in reference to how you could dictate if you could rent your home or not?
Absolutely not. If you own more than one unit in your community, all it means is you get more than one vote on things. That's all. You get more than one vote in the election. You get more than one vote when it comes time to decide whether or not you want to amend your documents. That's about it. Okay?
Okay. Next question.
Yeah.
In reference to the president, is it okay for him, the president, to have his or her parents working for the association?
The president's parents are working for the association. In what capacity?
Right.
What are they doing?
They're working as a secretary, as administrative, running the association, running the administrative aspect of the homeowners association.
Like a management company?
What do you say?
Management.
What do you say, guys? I'm thinking, that, do they have CAM licenses? Are they licensed as Florida Community Association managers?
No, they don't.
Yeah, then no, they can't be doing community association management. But question B is, how did the other board members approve this or not?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the rest of board members, I have never seen a vote that the president initiate that the board members object to. Never seen it in all my 5 years inside here.
Yeah, but I'd want to see an actual vote. I want to see minutes of a board meeting where the board had a quorum and a majority of that quorum voted to hire the president's parents as managers for the board. For the association, I say that didn't happen, number one. And number two, they certainly should not be practicing community association management without a license. As a matter of fact, I believe it to be a criminal offense, actually, under Florida law. All right? Kevin, if you want to talk about it more, give us a call in the office, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. On that note, let's go to Bob in Boynton. How are you, Bob?
Fine. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
I'm trying to sell my house, which is in a development that has an HOA. Now, the HOA claims to have a rule that a new buyer cannot rent the house within 2 years of purchasing the house. My lawyer, who I trust, has researched the documents of the HOA to the best of his ability, and he says that there is no properly entered or properly recorded rule to that effect. It just seems to be something that they put out in sort of a newsletter, and he doesn't think that is a valid or legal restraint as far as the rules of the association go.
That is
the
great.
The problem is that it's already spooked two potential buyers. And frankly, I'm calling you guys to see if there's a strategy to deal with this that you can recommend. My attorney has said we're at the point now where if they don't either back down and say, you know, you're right, or they don't produce the actual documentation of the rule, that the only thing we have left to do is to sue. And he says that it's the cost of the lawsuit isn't worth it. So he says we're kind of stuck unless they're going to cooperate.
No, I don't, respectfully, you know, I don't think I agree with your lawyer, because if you prevail against your condo, your HOA, you'd probably be entitled to reimbursement of your attorney's fees and costs, and you probably also suffer damages, and you can also sue for injunctive relief, which would stop them from pulling this nonsense in the future with regards to subsequent buyers you might find. And this is interesting because we teach this at the course, that there's actually a hierarchy in terms of the documents that govern your association. On top of the list, just underneath the statutes, is your governing declaration of covenants in an HOA. And in that declaration of covenants, you'll typically find provisions as to whether or not there are time limits regarding how long you must own your property before you could rent it out. And now, if there's no time limits in there, you know, it's silent on that issue, there's no chance that the board can put in a time limit simply by making a board-imposed rule. Okay, they would have to go through the more difficult process of amending the Declaration of Covenants, which typically requires a 2/3 or a 3/4 vote of all of the unit owners. But when you're talking about here a very specific restraint on alienation of your property, a restraint on the ability to rent out your property, and your Declaration of Covenants doesn't mention it, doesn't contain that restriction.
You win.
You win, absolutely. And I can tell you, you should be suing your association if the governing document, specifically your Declaration of Covenants, does not have that 2-year waiting provision. The board can't make that rule self-imposed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
And again,
I have one other. Can I ask you one follow-up?
Sure thing.
The fellow who runs the board says that they did vote on it and it has been properly entered and properly promulgated, but he won't. They won't show us where it is.
Well, what you should do. Hold on. What you should do is send a certified letter, return receipt requested, asking for copies of any and all of the votes that the unit owners voted to amend the Declaration of Covenants in that regard. You want to see the agenda of the meeting. You want to see minutes where the meeting of the meeting where the votes were counted. And my guess is none of those exist. They're not going to be able to give them to you if you can't find them in the recorded documents in the county where your condominium is located. Probably doesn't exist. And again, you'd probably win your suit.
Thank you very much.
All right, Bob. Hey, I wonder if it's the same president who had hired his parents in probably not. All right, taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. Let's head into our final break, and we'll be back right after this.
Segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates. The number to call is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right. By the way, happy Hanukkah to our Jewish listeners celebrating a holiday this year.
Hey, what about me?
You too. Happy Hanukkah.
Oh, thank you, boss.
All right. It's only fair, I guess. You know, not everybody might know what Hanukkah actually is and how it even relates to this show. So I think it's only fair of us to just explain to everybody what Hanukkah is all about and why we celebrate for 8 nights in a row. Turns out, believe it or not, Moses was the first actual condo owner ever. Believe it or not. This is how you learned it in Hebrew school, Scott, right?
I think so, yeah.
He owned in a place called the Maccabees of Jerusalem Condominium Association, Inc.
Sounds upscale.
Yeah, it's still on Sunbiz, believe it or not. You can actually look it up. And, you know, believe it or not, Moses fell behind in paying his condo dues.
I don't believe that.
I'm telling you. And even though the condo association could have foreclosed on that first night, they had waited until the 8th day to foreclose, allowing Moses to stay 8 days in the condo a little longer, and that is a miracle. That's why we celebrate to this very day, and we light candles 8 consecutive nights.
How charitable.
Isn't that nice of the condo association?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. How about we go to Jane in Miami? How are you, Jane?
Good, thank you.
How can we help?
My question is, can a former board member of a condo association who was recalled by 75% vote of the membership run again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they can. Just because you're recalled, you're not recalled for life. You're just out of that position that you formerly occupied. But when that next election comes up, absolutely, you get to run again. Okay.
Okay. It's Thank not, you for answering my question.
No problem. It's not a lifetime ban. I know that's perhaps what you were hoping for, but I know that's what everybody that votes for the recall were hoping for, but it doesn't work that way. But thanks for tuning in,
Jane.
Yeah,
what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask the people who recalled him, why are you voting for him again?
Yeah, right. It's not going to happen. Yeah. How about we go to Art in Pompano Beach? How are you, Art?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okay.
My question is basically at a building level as far as the president and secretary and the treasurer. When they did make a decision to do some work, in other words, spending money, and they have a meeting and not everybody can attend the meeting, how do the people that didn't go to the meeting for whatever reason, they have to work or what have you, and didn't get their vote for either yes, we want to do this, or no, we don't? How does that happen if they're not asked?
Imagine the nerve of this guy, Art. He actually wants to know how his money is being spent at the condo, and he's upset. He's upset that they're having these private meetings. You know, you're a very unreasonable guy, Art. I got to tell you.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way: if three people are getting together on your board, and that three is a majority, and they're making the three is a quorum of board members, and they're making decisions as to how to spend your money, that is a meeting of the board, and that needs to be published 48 hours in advance, and it needs to be open to everybody else.
Even if it's in the pool.
Even if it's taking place at the pool, absolutely. And there's no such thing as a workshop or anything like that. You have a quorum of board members, it's a meeting, and it needs to be noticed. There should be minutes taken, and you should be able to get copies of those minutes as well.
Okay, this is basically the meeting at the building level, not so much the association. This is before it would go to the association, or to getting people in the building together and saying, hey, look, we want to spend money to do the elevators over. Who wants that?
If a quorum of the board is getting together to discuss association business, that is a board meeting. It needs to be noticed. People have a right to attend. There should be minutes taken, and you should be able to get copies of those minutes as well. That's the only way I can answer your question. That's the law.
Gotcha. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Even if the attorney's there?
Even if the attorney is not there, it's still a board meeting. You have a quorum of owners in attendance, a quorum of board members in attendance. Sorry. That is a meeting.
No, I think...
Maybe I can ask the question in a different way while I still have you. If not everybody has a chance to vote, do they have to allow those people vote?
What are you saying? Unit owners don't have the right to vote?
No, I'm sorry. If the unit owner isn't present at the meeting where they're deciding, yes, we want to do this, or no, we don't want to do this. If you can't go to the meeting, do they have to make...
No. All the board's required to do is to post that notice 48 hours in advance, and if the unit owners can't make it to that meeting, that's their problem. If the board posted it properly and the quorum shows up, that board can vote. Okay? Hope that answers your question,
Thank
Art.
You, sir.
You got it. Okay.
All right, Eric, it's that time of the year again, and people want to put up displays regardless of whether they live in a condo or an HOA. So I guess we should probably start talking about what the law is with respect to, decorating your home. Until a few years ago, the law was unclear in Florida regarding some religious displays, and you even had some boards actually demanding that owners remove mezuzahs and crosses from their front door. Because these boards claimed that they wanted all doors in the community to look uniform.
Yeah.
Then, based on the law that first went into effect in Illinois, believe it or not, the Florida legislature passed a condo law that states an association may not refuse the request of a unit owner for a reasonable accommodation for the attachment of a mantle or frame to the door of the unit owner of a religious object not to exceed 3 inches wide, 6 inches high, and 1.5 inches deep.
Yeah, very specific statute. And if you
look
at the
law... We like to call it the mezuzah law.
The mezuzah law, right. And if you look at the law carefully, it allows you to display, not only this time of year, but throughout the year, a religious symbol on the frame or the mantle of your door only, but not on the door itself. And obviously, it also limits the size of what you can actually display. So to be clear, a unit owner of a condo still doesn't have the right to put up like a big picture of Santa Claus and his elves on their front door. Again, they don't have that right.
Unless your condo lets it happen.
Unless your condo allows it, obviously, and you have a board that doesn't care about stuff like that. But the statute does allow you to put up a small religious symbol on the door frame only.
So you're telling me that if I live in a condo, I can't put a Christmas wreath on my front door or a picture of Santa Claus?
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm telling you, Karen. And again, but as Scott says, some boards really don't enforce this. They don't care about it one way or the other, or they even try to promote, or encourage these types of displays. But according to the law, that's right. I'm telling you that you can't put a Christmas wreath on your front door or a picture of Santa Claus. Even in America, where we value religious freedom and free speech, there's no right to stick Santa, Rudolph, or Frosty the Snowman on the door to your condo unit. And that statute only gives you a very limited right to display your religious beliefs.
Yeah, the truth is, though, and as we just said, not every board cares one way or the other about what you put on your door or how big it is. Regardless if you exceed the 6x3x1.5 inch size limits, you can be asked to remove your display, and if you don't, you can get one of them lawsuits or arbitration suits.
Very small reason.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, and you know how we point out, we try every week on the show, how the HOA owners get the short end of the stick. Well, once again, let's point to how homeowners get messed up under this law. At the moment, there's no law under the HOA statute that gives owners in an HOA the same right to display any religious symbols. At least condo owners have somewhat of a limited right. It's amazing but true. The statute does not protect HOA owners. And owners living in an HOA, you need to really look at your own Declaration of Covenants and rules and your regulations to find out what you can and what you can't do this holiday season in your own community as far as holiday decorations go. And I can tell you, be prepared to fill out forms and potentially appear before an architectural review committee. And if you hurry right now, if you get your forms in quickly, you may wind up getting a hearing and be entitled to put up your Christmas display For 2013, that is, though, okay? So hurry. All right, before we go, we did wind up getting an email from Milan, who's in the Island Club, I think.
Milan, Italy?
Not from Milan, Italy, no. Let's see. The question is an email. I'm an authorized agent for a friend. There are five associations with 503 units. Can I be an authorized agent for more than one owner? Yes, you can, both under the condo statute and under the HOA statute. Unit owners who can't get access to records because, let's say, they live out of state, they have the right to ask an authorized agent or an authorized representative to go get the records for them. And there's nothing in the statute, Milan, that says you can't be the authorized representative for everybody else in the building if they appointed you as their authorized representative or their authorized agent. So I hope that answers your call.
Hey, we got a lot of really good questions today, Eric. Yeah, don't you think so?
Today was great, really. And again, like I said, very flattering having all the fans of the show come to the booth last week. Look forward to meeting everybody next week, Saturday, at our Condo Craze Board Certification in Orlando. I don't even know where I am anymore, to tell you the truth.
You're
driving
so
around
all over the state.
Yes, and remember, we have that following our seminar, we have a discussion panel on the new HOA bill. So we look forward to seeing everybody
in
Orlando.
It's going to be awesome. Be there.
It will be. All right, have a great week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Condo Craze and HOAs.